I like your perspective because you really seem to be able to put yourself back where you were going through the different phases. You're really able to remember that so well and help moms where they are.
I want them to feel seen and heard, but not coddled. I don't think that's what we really need. We need to feel like we're not alone, but that's not where it needs to stop. And I see so many accounts on social media and see so many books that their goal is simply to make people feel less alone. But if we all just feel less alone in our lostness, oh yay, we all stink at this together.
Yeah.
That's such a bad place to get stuck.
My name is Lisa, mother of seven and creator of the blog and YouTube channel Farmhouse on Boone. Join me as I share with you my love for creating a handmade home from scratch, cooking, and a little mom and entrepreneur life along the way.
Welcome back to the Simple Farmhouse Life podcast. Today I'm having on my friend Abby from M is for Mama. She wrote the book called M is for Mama. She has a podcast. I read the book, loved the book. I couldn't recommend it more. She always has such practical advice to share on motherhood. She says some hard things, but in a very loving way. I love that she doesn't coddle us like as mothers, but tells us, you know, and she's been there. She has 10 kids. So she can very much relate to where you are and your struggle. So we are going to chat today about a lot of various things, but one would be overwhelm and information overload and trying to find your own path. Whenever everybody is doing so many things, you get to see it all on social media and then be overwhelmed by, you know, which thing you should do and where you are in your journey and all of that kind of stuff. So let's dive into this awesome interview. All right. Thank you so much, Abby, for joining me. You've been a popular guest in the past, so I'm happy to have you on again. And we have a lot of topics to discuss. So before we get started, before I go off script and ask you about Europe, tell everybody about your family, your book, your mission over on Instagram, whatever else you want to share.
Yeah, sure. Hey, it's fun to be back. Lisa and I are in real life friends too. So this is like just getting to chat with a bestie, which is always fun. Yeah, my name is Abby Halberstadt and I run a ministry and a blog and a book platform and a couple of other things under the name M is for Mama. I've been doing that for a dozen years, ever since I only, quote unquote, only had three children. And I am up to 10 children at this point. We have two sets of twins. So we had 10 kids in 14 years. Our oldest is now 17. And we have pretty much stair steps down to 2.5-year-old twin boys. And my husband, Sean, and I live in East Texas. And he's a software developer, works for himself, an entrepreneur, does all kinds of business, real estate. He's just a really industrious guy. We've built a couple of houses together. I'm a fitness instructor on the side and we homeschool. So that's kind of us in a nutshell, not a very small nutshell, but a nutshell nonetheless.
Yeah, no big deal on the building your own house. I've been there and I was really impressed. I came home and I told my husband, I'm like, yeah, they built their house, but it's not just like what you're thinking. Like, I don't know. I feel like if we built a house, it would just be this straight box that would be like, we built it. Yay, go us. But no, very thought out, like the dream house for having 10 kids, if you ask me.
Well, that was our second go round. And our first go round was 100% the box. It was the rectangle, okay. You know, two stories on top of each other as energy efficient, like all of the appliances and the you know, water connections are like backed up to each other. Everything had to be as economical. And then the second round was still economical, but we knew at that point we had seven kids that we needed to kind of be a little more intentional with how we use the space.
Yeah. And that's exactly how I would describe the house. Very intentional. There were so many little spots that I was like, oh, this was very thought out for the function of your family. You also just took your 10 children to Europe for, was it 6 weeks?
Yes, that's right. Yep.
Okay. I thought I was doing my math right. Yeah.
Yeah. It was fully 45 days. We planned it about 5 years ago. We started thinking about this possibility. At that point, we had eight children and did all of the planning, all of the booking, all of the finding the discount plane flights and the group discounts and all of that stuff. And it was just a massive amount of work. And then COVID killed it 2 weeks out from the day we were supposed to leave.
Crazy.
And so that was a big bummer. But the Lord had something good in store. We had already done all that preliminary research and planning. And so we actually tacked on 15 more days with two more children in the mix because we wanted to have a little more freedom to relax and have downtime. And I don't know how much downtime we ended up having, but I'm glad that we had more time. And you asked me about books. I actually have a book called Emma's for Mama, A Rebellion Against Mediocre Motherhood that came out last year and has done really well. It was a Publisher's Weekly bestseller. And I've just seen the heart for women kind of wanting to rebel against this idea of motherhood being just a chore and a slog and misery and something to survive. And then I'm coming out with a new book in September called Hard is Not the Same Thing as Bad. And if I ever wanted to live out those words in beautiful places overseas, that Europe trip was it. Like, it was so hard in so many ways. You're taking toddlers to completely different locales and they're off their schedules and like way off their schedules, like 6 or 7 mm-hmm. hours right. different from where we normally are. And they are just crazy and frazzled. And you have to get on metros with 13 people. And we had a friend with us that was helping out. So it was 13 of us total, but it was challenging, but it wasn't bad. It was amazing. So yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I was telling my husband about it because I didn't really ever consider that that would be something like to do. Like I imagined if we went to Europe, maybe like me and Luke would go, or maybe me and Luke and a couple of kids. And then I told him, I was like, so my friend Abby took 10 kids to Europe. So now this is like a whole new possibility in my brain, because now I see that that's something you can do. And I told him it's our 2-year yeah. goal, but I don't know if 2 years is realistic, but I'm like, I want to do the same exact thing. I haven't even been out of the country at all.
Oh, man.
So I feel kind of like it'd be like, the planning part would be very, very difficult for me. And like, maybe Abby will like put up her itinerary and like sell it as a PDF or something. Cause that's,
I keep getting asked this. Really, Sean is the star of that show.
Yeah.
We plan together, but he is meticulous. And so we look for Airbnbs together, mm-hmm. but he's the one that really like researches what the Eurostar costs and when we need to get there and figures right. out the metro schedule. And so I pack for all the kids, you know, I'm doing food on the trip. I'm wrangling, but we're wrangling together. But yeah, I would say in the planning department, he definitely had way more of the heavy lifting, but we should put it all together. I just feel like it's such a unique trip with so many people. Now you could definitely get there. You're right behind me in kid number, and you would need like the big places to stay mm-hmm. and the tips on, I mean, we basically ate 90% of our meals in parks, you know, from grocery stores, because you can't uh-huh. take 13 people into a restaurant. You know, like, it just doesn't work out well.
No, it's not even fun.
No.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
Yeah, not even. I mean, obviously, it's like $300,
yes.
but then also, it's not even fun. Like, just, I always feel like we took our kids to Hawaii, and we had 7, and it just, everywhere you go, you're just a lot, you know? Like, even if everybody's being on their best yeah. behavior, it's still just a lot, and it's a lot easier just to be out in a park.
Yeah.
And but yeah, I can see how it would be a unique trip, like most. It wouldn't really apply, like your itinerary wouldn't apply to most situations,
yeah.
but it would apply to mine.
I
feel like that's exactly what we want to do.
Yeah, I think you would love it. And there are a lot of big families that would love it. And there's a scaled down version, certainly. And we did a lot of things that
yes.
smaller families would do. We did the London Eye. Like there were a couple of things that we were like, this will be a really fun experience. We will splurge on this. And actually, London Eye, interestingly enough, we combined it with a Thames River cruise and got the group discounts and did all that. And it really wasn't bad at all. People kept telling me how expensive it was, but it was okay. But the rest of the time, you're just kind of trying to cook at home and enjoy the outdoors. But we love the outdoors. So that was the kids' best memories. Like one time we took this hike up into mm-hmm. Muren, Switzerland, and you felt like you were walking through the set of Heidi. And everywhere you looked, you couldn't believe that this was actual real life views. You're like, God's creation is so spectacular, but it's just mind blowing right here. It's so close. You feel like you could reach out and touch the Swiss Alps. There are fuzzy cows wandering through the mountains, like with bells on their necks, letting you pet them. Like, it's just so idyllic. It's hard to believe that it's true. And yet we're wandering around singing Sound of the Music over the Sound of Music up there. So it was pretty amazing. We liked the outdoors the most.
Yeah. Well, I imagine there's a different kind of, like, I've never been on a vacation that's been more than a week. And so you can just kind of go all out, you know, you're just going to eat out just, but if you're there for 6 weeks, you need to almost figure out how to live normal life while there.
Yeah.
So I like that laundry. Idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Laundry. Yeah. You can't pack that amount of stuff. You can't eat out that amount of times. I also like the idea of waiting 2 or 3 years. And then our oldest, well, we're like a year and a half, I think, behind you in ages. But I like the idea of the older, like 4 or 5, really remembering it. Whereas up until now, that wouldn't have really been the case. And so I can see how this would be like a very good time to do that. I'm like, man, I have a whole new goal now that I didn't even know.
Yeah. And our oldest just graduated. Okay. And so he's not going anywhere yet. He's going to do an apprenticeship with Sean and do a boot camp for software development because he's interested in that too, and kind of figure out his life because he graduated early. So he'll be around. But still, this opportunity for all of us to do it together, this was the timing for it.
Right.
And yeah, it really, like I said, there were hard moments. There were lots of challenges.
Sure.
There were lots of meltdowns. But there was also a lot of like helping each other and so many sweet moments. They majorly outweighed the hard stuff for sure.
Yeah. I think I'm aware enough of like what it's like to take a lot of kids places to know that like every moment of this wasn't as dreamy as it might sound. It's more like this is a goal because I think it'd be really good for our family, but I don't know if I would even necessarily be so excited to go. I'd be like, okay, here we go. This is going to be real hard.
Yeah. We could do this. Uh-huh. Yeah, I was really, the thing that held me up was the plane ride. That was of all the things that I dreaded, if that's the right word, because of course I was looking forward to the trip. We decided to do this. We planned it for years.
Right.
We, you know, gotten it down to the last tiny little thing that we could control, you know, more or less. And the thing that just felt like the huge variable that I had no idea how it would go was the plane ride, because it's, you know, it's like a 7 to 8 hour ride, depending on which direction you're going. And then there's another like 3 hour one. And sometimes we had 3 hour layovers. And I think our first day of travel over there was something like 30 hours. Like by the time we finally rolled into our Paris like rental, because we would stay in Airbnbs because, you know, hotels, you'd have to divide up into 5 rooms and that's not going to work. And, you know, that kind of thing. So we would stay in Airbnbs. By the time we finally rolled up into our little Paris apartment on like the 5th floor or something like that and dragged all our stuff up there, it had been about 30 hours since we left. And it was crazy, but the kids made it. We did it. I mean, the Lord got us through. So I definitely say do it if it's in your heart and you can save for it and plan for it and it works out. It was great.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, good. It's been a goal ever since I saw that you did it. I was like, okay, now I know this is something that's even possible. It just didn't even occur to me.
Do it, Lisa.
It's like, you need to hang out with more people like that, that like, when you hang out with them, you think, oh, I didn't even know that was possible. Like, I know I need to have like a whole, surround myself with people like that. So you also didn't mention your podcast yet. And I have been loving your podcast. I mean, lately you've been on a birth series, which is extremely relevant to me at this exact moment. Whenever this podcast comes out, I mean, I'll have had the baby. But I'm at the very end of my pregnancy at this time. And so I don't really get interested in birth until it's really applicable to me. I'm just not like a birth junkie. Yeah. Some people are. Yeah. Like they love birth all the time, no matter what.
Yes.
I'm not. Like unless it's very imminently like applicable or somebody I know really well. Like I probably enjoy your birth stories no matter what. Yeah. But right now, like I guess birth's starting to become interesting to me yet again. But other than like you've had on your mom, you talk about a lot of child training topics. I like your perspective because you really seem to be able to put yourself back where you were going through the different phases. Whereas I feel like I have a less of a good memory with that. And so when people ask me certain things, I'm like, I don't even remember what it was like to have. You know, and sometimes it's hard to sympathize too, because when you've gone through a lot of different phases, looking back, it's like, well, that was easy, but it wasn't easy. It was not easy at that time. And you're really able to remember that so well and help moms where they are through your books, through your podcast.
No, thanks, Lisa. That's definitely the goal. I want them to feel seen and heard, but not coddled. Because I don't think that's what we really need. We need to feel like we're not alone, but that's not where it needs to stop. And I see so many accounts on social media and see so many books that their goal is simply to make people feel less alone. But if we all just feel less alone in our lostness, oh, yay, we all stink at this mm-hmm. together.
Yeah.
You know, that's such a bad place to get stuck. So I basically want to come alongside women and say, listen, I don't have this all figured out. But thankfully, I've had a lot of opportunity to practice this thing. And here's a biblical principle, not my way of doing things, not my exact mm-hmm. method, but here's something that I discovered or applied as a biblical principle. And then I did it for the next kid and I did it for the next kid. And this holds, like, it's true. And it's genuinely helpful and it's practical, but it also changes your mindset. It really, I mean, I think the biggest thing that I always point out, you were saying, I remember, and I do remember, but you're right. It's hard to feel again how hard that was when you quote unquote only had two, because you're not there mm-hmm. anymore. And two feels like a break when you have 10.
And when you get two, I actually am home right now. This is like extremely rare. Like, we're talking very, very rarely this would happen, but I'm in this unique situation where my husband is currently in Alaska with two of our boys, because we planned this trip. Fun. So that way we could, you know, he could go fishing and anyways, he's there. My mom took two of my other kids to a dairy farm tour. Again, this is all so rare and it all happened at the same time. And then my other two daughters went with my sister for another reason. My daughter is preparing to be a videographer at a wedding. Like, she wants to build up her portfolio. And so she has a lot of skills and she's going to help her like figure out her mics and all of this. So anyways, I'm home with one baby and I know it was not easy, but I'm like, oh man, I'm going to get so much stuff done because
it's so
right
much done.
Now, one baby is really, really easy. And I mean, he's the hardest one. He's a toddler, you know, but still. And so, yeah, I feel like you're able to go back and feel, because I know at that time that I just remember I remember the feeling of this being hard, but I have a hard time like putting myself there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just want to be able to say to people, again, in a biblical way, this too shall pass. This does not define you. This is not where we stay and wallow, because that doesn't serve anybody, mm-hmm. at least of all us or the Lord, and definitely not our children. So that's the goal, is to kind of just say, hey, I get it, but onward and upward. Let's see what we can do with this in the Lord's strength.
Yeah. And I think, too, the reason a lot of moms struggle to do what you do is also, I'm sure you get criticism from people who accuse you of having it or thinking that you have it all figured out. And that's not it at all either. It's just, yeah, coming alongside of them. So it's a mm-hmm. difficult thing to share the kind of content that you share, but it definitely is encouraging to a lot of women.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Yeah, I've been loving the podcast. I want to take a break from this episode to tell you about one of my favorite sponsors, and that is Tubes & Co. Tubes & Co. makes natural and organic skincare products that don't make you compromise on the quality. So they use ingredients that don't have anything synthetic or any of those chemicals that you find on the list of things to avoid, like most products. Yet they actually work really great. I have a full face of Tubes & Co. makeup, and of course you can go more made up by using the bronzer and the highlighter. I usually, a lot of times on my daily wear, just do the foundation, sometimes the concealer, the mascara I absolutely love, and then I'm really into their eyebrow pencil because I'm not a makeup artist, and it makes it really easy for me to do the whole eyebrow thing without really knowing what I'm doing. It has a little brush on the end and then a liner on the other side that's angled and makes it really easy. They also have amazing skincare products. I love their tallow balm. It's incredibly moisturizing, yet uses tallow from grass-fed cows, which you wouldn't think to use tallow on your face, or maybe you do now because it's definitely gotten more popular. But the way that it actually makes its way into your skin versus an oily-based thing like a coconut oil that I've done in the past that sits on top is incredible. It works so much better than a lot of the other natural moisturizers that I've tried. Plus, they have some really amazing scents. They also have cleansers, toners, the full line of facial care, but in an organic and natural way that you don't have to worry about what's actually in it. A lot of times, you know, we have these lists of things that we should avoid, and then whenever we look at all of our favorite products, they have them. You don't have to worry about that with Tubes & Co. It's nourishing, organic ingredients very simple yet effective. I'm not a lipstick wearer, but they have beautiful lines of lipstick. So if you are someone who likes a bright, punchy lipstick, but you're worried about all of the stuff going in, they have some wonderful nourishing lipstick as well. Tubes & Co. is offering Simple Farmhouse Life listeners 10% off by using the code FARMHOUSE. So head on over to tubesandco.com and use the code FARMHOUSE to stock up on some organic, nourishing, amazing skincare. Okay, so here is the topic at hand that inspired this episode. And if everybody can tell, I'm sweating because we're like experiencing weather like you guys right now, like Texas weather.
Oh, no.
Which is unusual. Like, apologies. So hot this cottage.
I can empathize.
Yeah. Yeah, you guys are used to it. Well, I'm out in my little cottage with my baby monitor on because the house is right there. And that way it's like better audio.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like, I'm going to go. I have another one to record after this. I'm just going to go inside. I'm like, eh, I'm going to go in the AC. So anyways, okay, yes. Here's the topic. When it comes to child training and homemaking, specifically having a tidy home, are there any tips you have to prevent the frustration and overwhelm that can come from a perfectionist mindset in both areas? For example, sometimes I try to take on too much with both homemaking and child training and then find myself frustrated. Some days I feel like I'm doing too much housework and not spending enough time with my kids. And then other days I feel like I had such a great day focusing on my children and then the house is a mess. Okay, so this is just like a whole thing that a reader sent in, which I thought you'd be the perfect person to talk about. I feel like my intentions are good and my pursuit is godly, but my expectations may be out of line and I need to take a more balanced, realistic approach. So the first question with that, assuming you don't have like something immediately to add, is how to not feel guilty or perfectionist about all of the things that you have or have not accomplished in the day. Is that something that you still struggle with or did you struggle with as a younger mom?
Yeah, for sure. I think that's just a really common thing. Now, I will preface this by saying that personality-wise, I am not typically a perfectionist, I wouldn't say. I like things to be well done, but I also am okay with good enough. Mm-hmm. Like, we got there. We accomplished it.
Right.
It's good. I'm moving on. I can do that. Personality wise.
Right.
However, here's where I can really relate to what she's saying. Several years ago, when we were first moving into this house, which was a Herculean effort, it was 2 years of building a house ourselves and raising small children and homeschooling and doing all the things. And it's just as hard as it sounds. And we didn't have much of a social life. And we, this is what we did for 2 years. And it absolutely paid off financially and as an experience growing together as a family. But it was really, really hard. And in the moving in process, it still wasn't done. We had concrete floors. We were surrounded by a sea of red dirt. Like everything was dirty all the time because we just kept tracking it in, which really messed with me mentally. I had a 4-month-old baby when we moved in. He was sleep regressing. It was just a lot. And so I started fighting anxiety over the very things that she's talking about. Like, how do I ever get off this hamster wheel of trying to keep this house clean? And there were some very practical things that happened, like getting our flooring in and getting some landscaping done that just needed to happen for my mental sanity, right?
Yeah.
But also, I had to have a mindset shift. And I talk about this mindset shift in MS for Mama of prioritizing what the Lord had for me over my own to-do lists. Because I could be just churning my legs like the Roadrunner in Looney Tunes all day long. By sheer, not by sheer nature of my own like productivity or how diligent I was, even if both of those were true, that wasn't why. It was because I had 7 children and a new house that we were still building on and we homeschooled and like, there's just stuff all the time to do, right? You know what this is like.
Yeah.
And so I could be going and still beating myself up at night at 11 PM when I fell into bed exhausted that I hadn't accomplished what I needed to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
And it's honestly a little bit arrogant because I realized I wasn't taking this to-do list to the Lord and saying, Lord, really show me my priorities here. Show me between work and focus on my family and play where this is supposed to be. And people are going to be like, Abby, that's not helpful because I don't hear voices from the Lord. Like, but it's more along the lines of, He gives you a nudge to sit down and talk to your husband on a date night at home. And your husband says, well, what if you did this? And you're like, oh my word, why didn't I think of that? You know, like, what if you let that go for this season? It doesn't bother me if you let it go. Are you the one that's hanging on to that? And I'll be like, yeah, I am. Nobody else cares. I'm the one that's putting this on myself. And your husband gives you that freedom. But it was the Lord that nudged you to ask him because you hadn't thought to ask him before. You'd just been up in your own head. So when I say submitting it and committing it to the Lord, I don't mean that you're going to get a, thou shalt do the dishes first, then thou shalt, you know, do this. You're probably not going to get that. But I can tell you that right now, in some ways, my life is busier than it has ever been. I have speaking engagements and book deadlines, and I still do a lot of the other stuff. And yet I still spend most of my days at home, and I do not fight that feeling of self-loathing and total imbalance, feeling like I worked and I worked and I worked and I still accomplished nothing. There are days that are more balanced than others.
Right.
But that feeling of like irritation with yourself and never being enough is pretty much gone. And I think that's a work of the Lord in my heart. So I think she's right that the priorities and the heart issue are where you start, not necessarily with the actual tasks.
Right. Because there's always more to do. I mean, no matter what you accomplished, there's always at least 10 more things you could have done or 10 different ways, directions you could have gone for that day. You know, you could have, there's always a large amount of pathways each day when it starts, especially as a stay-at-home mom, you know, you have control over it. And so there are a lot of different directions you could go.
100%.
And if you, you could have that feeling no matter what you accomplished. So, okay. Another thing I get asked a lot, and I actually did like a whole YouTube video on this recently because it was almost like I sometimes take comments as like accusing me of something, even though they're just maybe not, like they're just insecure in themselves. But one thing I get is people are like, how do you get anything done with kids? My kids are always right there and there's constant interruptions. So how do you get, you know, a to-do list accomplished whenever there's kids there? I guess I sometimes take it as your kids aren't actually there. And I'm like, they're really there. Like they're just outside of the shot. Exactly. So yeah, the constant interruptions is something I get asked about a lot. How do you address that? And is that just something that gets easier over time with more experience as a mom?
I think it does get easier over time as you find balance. And you also, and I think you and I both know that there are going to be people on the internet that are going to assume that if our older children help at all, that they're just running everything behind the scenes, which is almost laughable.
Yes.
Because if anyone has ever been in a home where children are quote unquote running things, it doesn't go super well. Things get dropped.
Right.
Things, they're not adults. It's not their actual responsibility. So
no,
it doesn't look like that at all. But there is something very much so to having hands that can fetch diapers or make a smoothie. In other words, it's not all you like it is when you have only little children.
Yes.
You can't tell a two-year-old to go make a smoothie, but an eight-year-old can make a smoothie and they can love doing it. Like we have something called a penny reward system. Mm-hmm. I have an ebook about it and I say that because people are usually like, wait, what is that? You know?
Yes.
So if you want to pick out it out on my blog at emersformama.net, I have an ebook about it that explains what that is. But if our kids make food for the family, they get pennies. That's just one of the things that is like a thank you to them. So an eight-year-old gets 2 pennies for making a smoothie and he is just thrilled to death, you know? So just kind of hacks like that, where you have kids that are eager to help and not just quote unquote interrupt all the time. But I will speak to this and say that I think that part of what our society has done has been to sell this narrative that we as parents are entertainment cruise ship directors, and we need to keep our children happy all of the time, rather instead to give our children a sense of purpose and joy and fun as they are integrated into meaningful family pursuits. So if I have this pressure on me that I'm supposed to stop making muffins to go play with my child on the floor or do the look mom game, mom, look, mom, look, mom, look, mom, look, instead of saying, hey, I know you want me to come watch that, but I need to finish the muffins. How about you come join me and make muffins? So it's no longer an interruption. Instead, it's an invitation to experience what you're experiencing, to learn a skill. And yes, it will go slower. So we have to stop viewing it as our job to keep our kids constantly entertained. Yes, I do fun things with my kids. I play games with them. I play ping pong with them. I take them to the park. We go to the pool. The list could go on and on. I read to them all the things, but I'm trying to invite them into not a VBS situation where we're just entertaining ourselves all the time, but real life,
right?
Where they end up not interrupting, but like I said, participating. And I think that's a huge mindset shift that can really help moms.
Yeah. I sometimes will frame it as, okay, we have this to accomplish today. When this gets done, we're going to go do this. And I am not shy at all about giving my kids jobs. I mean, all of them, like even just down to the youngest. I'm like, hey, go do this, go do this. So we're kind of all just, you know, going and doing stuff together. And the one who is difficult to get stuff done around, and maybe a lot of these questions come from people who have a one-year-old and a three-year-old, in which case, it's kind of tough. Like, containment is my only solution for that. Like, when the child is contained with me in the kitchen, they can run around and open drawers and do whatever, and I can still do what I'm doing in the kitchen. But it's a little different. Exactly. You can't really, you know, there's not a whole lot they can do to meaningfully help you or, you know, really like participate. But it probably is just a lot of times moms who don't yet have that perspective, or if you're out of the home a lot too, this is another thing that I find happens, is when you're not home a lot, there's just not a lot you can get done. But when you're home a lot, even while you're there with a bunch of children, you can still get a lot done. And I think that's where...
Absolutely. And I feel like, speaking to what you're speaking, I talk about this on my podcast that you talked about, which, thank you that you love it. I am loving doing it. It's one of my favorite things that I get to do. Who knew? It took me a long time to get there, but my son edits it and it's fun. I don't like the technological side, but I love the just getting to talk to people side. And so I get a lot of those questions where people are picturing me with 10 3-year-olds and their minds are just blown and they're stressed for me.
Yes.
And so you're right. Someone says, I just don't understand. I can't get this. And I think, well, I wasn't in this season of life when I had a 1 and a 3-year-old. I still made dinner but there was a lot more of the entertaining going on because it was easier for me. We went to the park a lot more because it got us out of the house and we didn't make a mess.
Oh, I agree.
Whereas now.
We did that all the time.
I birthed them a bunch of besties that they can play with. So it's not as necessary. Yes, we still get out of the house, but it's not as necessary for my mental health or theirs that we go and do something, because you're right. We have this family culture where we're home a lot and we're getting stuff done and we're playing. And you're right. We say, so we have two, you didn't ask for this specifically, but it's kind of goes along with the perfectionist. I remember reading something from Joanna Gaines, who was talking about being a perfectionist. And I think she is way more than I am naturally. Mm-hmm. So I'll use her as an example. And she said she finally had to give up this concept of her home looking magazine ready all the time, which I was like, finally had to. I gave that up pretty early with kids. And she established, I can't remember exactly how many, but like maybe one cleanup time, like a really big cleanup time, and then told herself, the rest of the time we live here. Yeah, we're picking up as we go, but we live here and it's going to look that way and it's not going to be perfect. And then we will reset it all. So with as big of a family as we have, if we just did the we live here the whole time, except for one cleanup, we might not ever dig out of the pile. So we do two of those a day. We do a morning reset and an evening reset. And that helps any perfectionist tendencies that I have so much. Because I don't want anybody to be deceived that I am a perfectionist, but I would 100% prefer everything to be in its place. Mm-hmm. I don't like visual chaos. And so we do that twice a day. We get it back to really good, where stuff is put away and things are folded and the dishes are loaded and all of that. And that helps me to avoid the feeling of it's always a mess all the time, because I know that time is coming again when we can tackle it again. And when you establish that, even with a 1 and a 3-year-old, just like you were talking about, hey, go throw this away for me. Hey, can you bring mommy that bowl? Here, we're going to put these cups in this drawer that's really easily accessible. You're building on habits that are really going to pay off in the future with kids that understand what to do, because you've repeated it so many times that it's just rote by this point.
Yeah. I like how organized you are with the like set times. We don't have set times like that, but at least 2 times a day, there's that moment. And I like the idea of it being a set time, because then maybe it's not like all of a sudden, oh boy, we got to clean up. Like, it's just, okay, this is what we do at this time. Because I'm with you. If we didn't do it at least twice a day, it would... I have to thoroughly clean the kitchen between each meal or I just cannot. I don't like... I'm definitely a person who does like tidy. I mean, I wouldn't say that my house looks magazine ready, but I, you know, the counters have to be wiped and clean, not just dishes off of them 3 times a day. It's just, it's not something I've made a, like every day at 10:30, you know, 2 and 7, but it just is something that happens because I can't start cooking the next meal when there's stuff all over it. It's just my personality. So one thing that has been very helpful for me in my from scratch kitchen is a grain mill. Recently, actually probably a year ago now, I upgraded to the Mock Mill because of its beautiful design. It has this wood finish. It's very thin. It doesn't have a bowl with it. So you can take any bowl that's laying around your house, depending on how much flour you want to make. So it's not this bulky thing always sitting there. And I absolutely love it. It makes it to where I have it always accessible. I can grab some whole grains, throw it in really fast while I'm busy in the kitchen, which is what has always stopped me from milling grains very often before. I've been experimenting with kamut, einkorn, spelt, rye. I like to do my basic no-knead sourdough recipe and then throw in about a fourth of the flour in some other grain. It doesn't alter the recipe very much. It makes it to where it's still very palatable. It's fluffy and delicious, but then we also have that added whole grain. Sourdough starters are also very happy being fed with whole grain flours. And so having a mill is just a very nice addition to a from scratch or a homestead kitchen. Mock Mill is offering Simple Farmhouse Life listeners a 5% off discount using my link, bit.ly/farmhouse mock mill. Again, that's bit.ly/farmhouse mock mill, all lowercase. I've had some people say that they didn't see the discount applied. It will be once you go through the entire checkout process. There's no coupon code required. Once you get to the final stages of checkout, you will see that there is that 5% applied. Again, I couldn't recommend the Mock Mill more. Head to bit.ly/farmhouse mock mill. It'll also be linked down in the show notes or description box. Okay, so let's see here. As far as in the perfectionism self-talk category, another one is accepting responsibility for raising kids in the way they should go without making their success and failure yours. I think this is something a lot of moms struggle with is... how am I going to raise a perfect child?
You're not. Newsflash, it's not going to happen. I feel like performance-based parenting is fear-based parenting. We are terrified that they're not going to turn out a certain way when we're in this mindset, and it makes us very controlling. Whereas if we parent as unto the Lord, like whatever you do, whether you eat or drink, do it all for the glory of God. Well, when you wipe a bottom, do it for the glory of God. How do you do that? Well, you try to do it with patience rather than annoyance. And I'm going to tell you, we've had some stomach bug issues and a lot of bottom wiping happening. Mm-hmm. And I'm not always, you know, one round of it happened right before this podcast. And I was for sure hurrying him up because we needed to get to bed. And I don't know that I was doing it to the glory of God. I think it was doing it to the glory of staying on a schedule, you know? And so finding that balance of truly doing now, I needed to be on this podcast at the time that I said I was going to be, or as close as I could to it. Right. I think honoring our commitments is important, but kids will often, quote, get in the way of that. And we have to understand that if we are parenting as unto the Lord, we can do the best we can and ask for grace. Like I did when I texted you and said, can we start 5 minutes late, you know, or we can get really rigid and uptight and say, I am the sole determiner of this. You're not doing. And then we inevitably create a lot of stress in our homes. So I know it's really, really hard to release this concept in your head that you get to determine the outcome, but we really don't. The Lord is the one. It says that he turns the heart of the king like a water course. Like he's literally in charge of what goes on in our hearts. And goodness, that's so convicting when I see what goes on in my heart sometimes. And I think, Lord, man, you're the only one that can change this. But it's true of our children as well.
Right. And it's very freeing because, you know, just recently the documentary is kind of all the rage, the Shiny Happy People or whatever. I'm sure you've heard of it. And I think that that movement was born out of, you know, if you do X, Y, Z, then this will happen. And then, you know, you're fully putting yourself in control of everything in a way that you never really had.
No, no, we just don't have that level of control. We have a huge level of responsibility. Mm-hmm, and I think that's where I get a little concerned, is I see parents saying things like, oh, you know, I'll just wing it. It keeps me on my knees. Like, it keeps me humble.
Right.
And I'm like, well, humility is good. Being on your knees is good. But the Bible has too much to say about, you know, Deuteronomy 6, verses 6 through 8, I think it is. It's talking about training up your children. It doesn't use that phrase in that verse, but it's the idea of teaching God's laws to your kids when you sit down and when you lie down and when you stand and when you walk in the way. It's basically encompassing everything we do in life, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's such a huge responsibility that I don't want to take lightly, that I don't want to get kind of blasé about the responsibility. I just want to have a right perspective about who actually determines the outcome. Because that's just, like you said, where the freedom comes.
Yeah, that's definitely a distinction to make. And I think people struggle with that balance and how to, you know, but it's pretty clear in the Bible what our responsibilities are. Mm-hmm. And yeah, letting the outcome not be completely up to you will help you to not have this going to bed at night. I remember whenever my first couple kids were little, like going to bed at night and like thinking through everything and being like, oh, I messed up there. I messed up there. Like that's not the right approach.
No. And the Bible so clearly tells us that as far as the east is from the west, that's how far God has separated our sins from us. So if we are dealing with an area of recurrent sin, like I have another ebook, I sound like I'm just plugging ebooks, but it helps because people are, they want to ask the same question over and over again. You can say, go do this resource, then it's nice. For a challenge that I started called the Gentleness Challenge after Shiloh, my number 8, was born and I was struggling with postpartum rage. And I couldn't have told you that's what I was doing at the time. I just knew I felt irritable and snappy and was raising my voice a lot and was getting frustrated over silly things. And I had to come to the realization that hormones are no hormones, you know, imbalances postpartum or not, it was on me to respond to the Holy Spirit's prompting that was saying, Abby, kindness and gentleness, you know? And so that's something that I had to do that turned it around. So sometimes we do have to be very proactive. We have to take big steps and the Lord asks us to do that. It's not easy, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think it was on that podcast that you talked about how if a friend is at our house or we're by friends at a park, the way that we talk to our kids versus how we feel comfortable talking with the people closest to us because we feel so comfortable with them in our own homes. I think that was on your podcast. And I was like, man.
Yeah, yeah.
That's so true.
The concept that what if you're in the grocery store and you know someone's listening to you? Man, some people obviously don't care. You hear those people and they're going to say whatever they're going to say.
Right.
But so many of us that want to be approved by man, by other humans, can somehow find it in us to be so patient and forbearing when our toddler or our 7-year-old does something, you know, licks the floor or knocks all the cereal boxes off because they were flailing around and you had already asked them not to 3 times. You know, that kind of thing where you're like, you feel your blood kind of boil a little bit because you're like, this was totally avoidable. Now I look silly, you know, and yet we're able to rein it in and keep our tongue.
Yeah.
If we can do that in public when people are watching, we should be able to do it at home when our children are watching and God's watching, you know? It's really, I mean, just saying that sentence to myself, again, this is not me saying I have this figured out. It's so convicting, so convicting to me.
Yeah. Well, you just get so comfortable with all the people in your house and that's not okay because you obviously notice the difference whenever you're out in public, you know, the difference and then, let it all hang out at home because, you know.
So the goal obviously is consistency. It's integrity. I talk to my kids all the time about integrity. Integrity is doing the right thing, even when no one's making you or watching you or scoring you or grading you or giving you a, you know, a raise if you do it. Mm-hmm. And we as moms are called to that too. So I hope people don't just hear like, I'm convicted and I have a totally different tone. It's possible, but the goal always is striving to be exactly the same at home in terms of kindness and gentleness and follow through, consistency, all of those things as I would be out at a park or at the grocery store. I'm a fallible human being, so it won't always match up. But I right. never want it to be that it's like, that's just really hard. So I just kind of let it go.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yes. Just, yeah, we do live in that culture. And I think that's what your whole book, like your whole first book is basically about is, yes, this is the culture we live in, but that is not like we're fighting against that as hard as it is to, you know, recognize something's wrong.
Yeah, it's not who we have to be. And it's certainly not who we were called to be.
Yeah. Yes. I need to listen to your book again. I've listened to it probably closer to when it came out and then you listen to it again. Okay. So one topic that or one question that I got, and I thought about making this its own episode, and I might, but I also wanted to get your perspective on it. Okay. How do you balance acquiring new information and finding the time to lay out how to implement it? Sometimes all the information we have access to these days feels like drinking from a fire hose. How do you figure out how to plan out the changes you want to make? I always feel like I'm racing against the clock each day. So this is probably more like not along the lines of like, you know, some of the stuff we were talking about, but actual practical things. Like I want to learn how to do X, Y, Z. And I know one thing you talk about a lot is nobody does it all. Like you, you have these really cute pictures of your kids and you guys coordinate. I think you and I specifically had this conversation and I'm like, man, my kids always look like just whatever. Like they just pull out, you know, the Nike shirt. And but then I like to milk a cow. And so I guess the first thing to say is, we don't do everything, you know, so you have to like pick a few things and maybe like, I don't know, how do you want to answer that? Balancing all this new info. And
well, and I will just say, and I probably told you this at the time that if my kids are cute, it's because it's Sunday.
Right. Well, like, yes. Yes. Oh, I understand that they don't look like that every day, but even once a week would be a big deal for me. Yeah.
But I do feel like there are certain moms. I have a mom friend in mind that her kids always look like they're at a boutique. Uh-huh. But the interesting thing about it is that's not hard for her.
Yeah.
That would be a monumental effort for me every single day.
Right.
Like I don't plan our wardrobes to the point that they're all mix and match, but I think it's so cool that she does, meaning like that she loves it and enjoys it mm-hmm. and gets creative thrills from that. And her kids have play clothes. They can get dirty in them. It's not like she's like, they have to stay pristine. They just all match. And so yes. it's always yeah. like this very calm aesthetic. And I think that's awesome because she enjoys it. So right. that would be my first point is yes, it can feel like just getting blasted in the face from a fire hose with all mm-hmm. or a fire hydrant with all the information that's out there. But in the same way that we can take our daily tasks to the Lord and say, can you help me prioritize this, Lord? Kind of bring me somebody that shows me that where my interest should be, you know? And what that looks like a lot of times is, let's say that you've been wanting to learn to make sourdough, which is definitely on my list. It has not happened yet. And you are the sourdough queen. So I bow and grovel, but I still haven't done sourdough yet. But a friend of mine just came and was like, hey, I'll show you how. I'll bring over my starter. Well, I mean, that could definitely be the Lord saying that just got bumped up the list. I get to hang out with my friend. I get right. to learn a new skill. So if we are running around trying to put all of our fingers in the holes in the dike and feeling like we can't ever find one that has more priority than another, then we're probably not going to do any of them. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. Making small changes. So like if you're trying to do more non-toxic living, the next time you go to the grocery store, instead of being like, someday I will, just take 10 minutes to read the labels.
Right.
And get the one that doesn't have, you know, sulfates and phthalates and these things that you know you don't want. And it may not be perfectly clean and you may not have done all the research, but you took a step right. instead of staying paralyzed and just running in a circle. So I'm always a big fan of, again, taking it to the Lord and then being amazed at the practical ways that he helps those priorities fall into place. And then taking the small step,
yes.
doing the thing. Also deadlines. Mm. I work really well on deadlines.
Same.
So even if they're self-imposed, yeah. if you will say by a month from now, I will have at least tried a sourdough starter and given it a shot, I am much more likely to do it than I am if I just say someday I should start sourdough bread making, you know?
You're right. Right. Yeah. It's hard. Like I think some people are really good at letting themselves off the hook. I think you're a very self-motivated person. To be honest, I'm a very self-motivated person. And so
yes, you are.
If I say that, like, I'm definitely going to have to do it. Cause it's like, I'm my worst boss. Like I'm like, come on, we got to do this. Some people aren't that way. And so it's like, well, what if I am just going to let myself off the hook. It's like, well, a month's passed. Oh, well, like, you know, I think for some personalities that might be hard.
Yeah. And hopefully for those personalities, they either are married to someone or have a close friend who can help hold them to things if they're willing to be held accountable, because right. accountability is also a great yeah. way of getting stuff done. Or they are able to live life with an attitude of, I didn't get to it and I may never get to it, but I'm doing the best I can with what I have. You know, like,
oh yeah, that's an option too. That's an totally option too. An option.
You don't yeah. necessarily have to overhaul everything in your life. Now, again, I there's a line from MS for Mama, and it feels weird quoting myself, but it's just what pops into my head because this is what I would tell people. There are moments where the Holy Spirit is whispering to you, do better. And I know that do better phrase has a lot of like cultural connotations right now. And so I use it with great fear and trembling. But when it's from the Lord, then I think we should listen. And it really doesn't matter who else isn't getting the same message, because we do a whole lot of this. What is she doing? Well, if she's doing that, then I need to do it. If she got herself out of that, then I shouldn't have to do it either. And instead, I would say, absolutely. Hopefully you can live in a place of, I'm doing the best I can with what I have, unless there is just a conviction from the Lord that may come through a very practical source, like someone in your family, like your boss, like your bestie, like your mentor, saying, hey, I'm happy to work on this with you, but I think we need to work on this. Those are moments where you have to say, okay, this isn't contentment anymore. This is complacency, and I need to do something.
Yeah.
And they're uncomfortable moments, but they're also good ones.
I think something has to change if you're always extremely overwhelmed by the amount of information that you have. So if that's even just getting off Instagram, I mean, like, can't watch it, or you got to delete Instagram from your phone, because clearly you're at a spot right now where the information is no longer helpful, motivating, inspiring, convicting. It's just like this dreadful, heavy thing.
Yeah.
And at some point you can turn the fire hose off. Like, we actually can do that.
Yes. That is wonderful wisdom, Lisa. I think everybody just needs to hear that if they hear nothing else. We actually aren't required to get on the internet and consume all of this. We aren't. You know, if we think back 50 years ago, people didn't have this. 50 years before, they really didn't have this. And somehow they survived, you know?
Right.
Yeah. You're going to be okay. Do the next right thing, but it doesn't have to be what the internet tells you.
Right. There's always some new thing to get like into. I mean, it can be down to the most minuscule things that there is now. Like, now it's better to not do this. And now it's better to do this. And it's like, I feel like this is good enough. Like, we're just going to have to step away for a minute.
Right. I saw some post the other day about what you had to feed your baby as their first food, and because they would be iron deficient without it. And it was good information.
Yeah.
But it hasn't been any of my baby's first foods.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And it would be very easy for me to panic and be like, well, shoot. Like,
yeah,
I muffed that one. I don't get a do-over. What do I? Huh? And it was even talking like exclusively breastfed babies, which we're told all the time, that's great for babies. Exclusively breastfed babies are going to struggle with anemia because of this. So this should be your first food. And I was like, oh my goodness. All the exclusively breastfeeding mamas are panicking right now. I'm like, this isn't
and it's
enough.
A new I can't thing for them to worry about.
The anxiety levels start ticking up. So yeah, it definitely can be that way. And I closed that post and I walked away. I don't have anybody that needs a first food right now. I will keep that tidbit in my mind for the future, but I can't freak out over it.
Honestly, I'm probably at the point where I'm like, even if I have a baby who will have a first food in like 7 or 8 months, I'm still like, like, it's worked out like so far, you
it's
know,
gonna be okay.
Yeah, it's going to be okay. And you know, sometimes you have capacities.
Yes. 100%. Such a good point. I have had seasons in my life when I have had more capacity for things and others that my capacity was so much more limited. And I think we need to acknowledge that, and I actually have an entire podcast about that, because I had people coming up to me at a speaking event. And I only started speaking events about a year ago. And well, you and I got to do the Wellness Collective together, and that will be 2 years ago this fall.
Yeah.
But I wasn't speaking regularly at that point. So I just started speaking regularly, like fall through this last spring semester. And that I was 40 years old. Like,
Right. That right. Wasn't, so people
like,
forget.
I didn't do that when I was 20 and had two small children. Mm-hmm. And so I had people coming up like, wait a minute, where are your children? How are you able to, you have 10, I feel so inadequate. And they're like,
yeah,
panicking,
you're like,
because
what?
I'm
chill?
At a speaking event. And yeah. I just want to say, no, take a deep breath. This is not what the Lord has called you to. This is not the season that you're in. What I do has no bearing on what you do. And I would have to say that's true about my younger self. What I do now doesn't, it's connected to what I did when I was younger. There has been progress. The Lord has brought me to different places and presented me with different opportunities and different challenges. But I can't just make this perfect comparison. Well, 25-year-old me could do this, and now 40-year-old me does that. You know, it's just, it doesn't work that way. Mm-mm. We have to be realistic about where the Lord has us in the season that he has us.
Yeah, that's something people tend to always forget, and including myself, is looking at people and what they're doing and then thinking, just imagine your life and think back to when you 15 years ago. And a lot of people, you know, they don't have that perspective, because a lot of the people who listen to my podcast or watch my YouTube channel are younger moms. Actually, my most popular demographic is the one just below my age. And so they don't even have that perspective enough to know how much your season changes. I know that we know it, but you really, it's just so hard to truly recognize how much seasons change even in just a couple years. Like 2 years ago, there's no way you could have done that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I've talked about this before, but one thought that comes to mind as far as writing books, because people always ask me about that. How in the world would a mom of 10 have time to write books? And I remember thinking that about a mom of, I think about 10, 8 to 10 kids. I don't remember that I saw years ago. Well, I have 5. I mean, I was doing the exact same thing that people do. I have 5 and she has like 8 and she wrote a book. How in the world?
Right.
That's my dream. How am I going to get there, Lord? And you're just worrying about stuff that there's a reason Jesus tells you not to worry about tomorrow, because today has enough trouble of its own. Like, that's just kind of wraps it up in a nutshell. You
right.
have nothing
yes.
to do today. Yes. Don't worry about it. Do the next thing that uh-huh. I asked you to do that might get you there, but without any guarantees. Because now it seems like my husband and I were on a date last night. And that's another thing. People are like, how in the world do you go on dates? And they're talking about having 3 small children and no babysitting help. How do you do dates?
You're like,
I have
older
a 17-year-old and a 15-year-old and a 12-year-old and 2 10-year-olds who are all very, yeah. very helpful and like proficient,
yep.
you know, like this is not the same things. And so we were talking on the date last night about my next book deadline, which is January of 2024, which sounds like a long way away, but it takes a minute to write a book. And he's like, mm-hmm. oh my word.
Yeah. But
how are you going to finish that
right
by
up.
Then?
Yeah.
Because we have all this stuff going on between now and then. And I said, don't freak me out, because I'm not freaked out. I could do this. I could do this.
Yeah.
But it would have
yeah,
freaked me out completely 5 years ago. That kind of deadline with, you know, these other requirements on my time, mm-hmm. it would have been like, oh, you're right. I need to worry. And now I'm like, I've done this twice. I'll do it again. It's going to be okay. You know, man, that perspective thing is so huge.
It is. And sometimes it's the moms who are feeling that way. They're feeling really bad about themselves. And then sometimes they flip it and they judge you because they imagine them doing what you're doing, not knowing what goes into what you do. And like, well, if I did that, I'd have to
yeah.
do this, this, and
yeah.
this. And therefore, that's terrible. And it's like, well,
right.
that's not what I did, though. This is different.
Right. And I think yours and my life, your and my life are an interesting one to juxtapose, because we have some similarities. We're online. We both have blogs. Mm-hmm. We both have podcasts. I firmly believe you're going to have that sourdough book pretty soon.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I am writing one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd heard inklings of that. So that's awesome.
Yes.
And so there are overlaps. And yet a lot of the rest of the way we spend our time is very different. I don't milk mm-hmm. cows. I don't make sourdough. I think I might get there one day. Like, we have some goals of having more of a homestead situation in the future, but it's not the season of life that I'm in right now. And if you just
right.
laid our lives on top of each other, there would be a lot of places that did not match up. And yet I am not over mm-hmm. here going, well, Lisa, that wouldn't work for my life. So you just need to make me feel better about myself or change
yeah.
or do things differently. And I'm also not over here. I am in awe of what you do. I am very impressed, but not in a competitive way. That's amazing. You are doing good work for the Lord. Like, I'm so glad you're following. Like, the calling of the Lord and working with your family. And I'm encouraged, like exactly what you said at the beginning. That was so kind of you to say that, like, follow more people that make you go, I didn't even know this was possible. Mm-hmm. I had so many people about that trip that we took. And I actually wasn't expecting this at all. This was a huge surprise to me. Say almost exactly the same thing that you said. And they were all ages, all sizes of families. They were like, I didn't even know I wanted to travel with my kids until I watched y'all do this. In fact, I thought I didn't. And I was like, well, Lord, how cool is that? Like, I didn't know that that was going to be an outcome. But if more families get out there and make memories with their kids as a result of watching our family do it, just well, praise God. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. So I think we need more of that mindset of look at her walking in the calling that the Lord has for her. May I do the same, instead of why doesn't that work for me? Or I can't believe she, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And I know for me, whenever I have like more of the first or the second mindset that you were just talking about, it's usually because I need to like step back and stop drinking from the fire hose and get more aligned with what is going on in my own life. And then you can come back and you can be inspired when a family takes their 10 kids to Europe instead of, you know, I'm sure some of the things you got. I mean, I just know with the internet, like there's definitely people who had their other opinion. It's like, okay, yep. If this isn't inspiring, maybe at this point, you know, and I can't understand that somebody's in a different season of life than me. Maybe I just need to like put stuff away.
Unfortunately, man, that self-awareness is hard, Lisa. I have just found that a lot of times the people that need to walk away and step back don't realize it. So you're talking about that self-awareness.
Yeah,
when you're like,
it's a hard place being on the internet.
It is, yeah. And you just kind of have to come to expect it. But there's so many good interactions. You and I have had this conversation before too, that like the good interactions, at least as far as the people that talk to your face, the good interactions versus the bad, like far outweigh them. Like it's just really kind people that you get to meet. And then the frustrating ones, you just kind of have to let it go.
It's true. All right. Tell everyone again about your new book coming out, because this is probably going to come out late July or August. So your book's coming out in September. And then also about your podcast, where to follow along with that.
Okay. Yeah. So the second one, like I said, is called Hard is Not the Same Thing as Bad. It was actually supposed to be my first book and the Lord absolutely changed the order, and MS for Mama was supposed to be the first book. So I'm glad that this is basically building on the concept of, okay, we're being countercultural. We're seeing our children as a blessing. We're parenting as unto the Lord instead of from a place of fear or abdication of authority or responsibility. Now what? This is hard. Like, what do I do with this, Abby?
Right.
Because I get so many messages from MS for Mama saying like, this completely changed my perspective. Like I'm reading my Bible. I'm memorizing scripture. Yeah. I'm parenting differently. I'm not avoiding my kids. I'm not hiding in the pantry anymore. And it's been so great. But where do I go from here? Hard is not the same thing as bad is the answer to that. What does that practically look like when you start rubbing up against the challenges of engaging more with your family and of that really countercultural radical call to be all in for Jesus, and what that looks like when your mission field first and foremost is your home, and then of course the rest of the world. And so the subtitle is The Perspective Shift That Could Completely Change the Way You Mother. And I've already heard over and over again, as I've used this phrase, that it's a really friendly phrase to guys too. So a lot of families adopt it because that's a very manly sounding phrase. Hard is not to say, oh yeah, yeah, I can get behind that. Like I'll do hard things. My husband actually writes a little, what we call dad thoughts at the end of each chapter, because moms write me constantly. Where's D is for daddy. Where's the men's version of this? Yeah. Where's the exhortation for dads to be all in? Like we need this for our culture so badly. And so he's in there at the end, giving that dad perspective in little snippets. And I think it's just going to be a really practical tool for those that are willing to take and desiring and just kind of desperate to take that next step toward what it looks like to go against the grain and to invest in what I call legacy parenting. You're not just parenting your own kids. You're having an impact on them that will hopefully be passed on to their children and their children's children. And that's huge. That helps you to pull your mind up off of what's been my reality this week, cleaning up puke and nasty poop. I mean, that's what we've done this week, you know? And if I say, this stinks, literally, this is no fun, I don't like this now, then it's so easy to wallow. But if I say, this may not feel like it has a purpose in this exact moment, but in the process of serving my kids and loving them well through this sickness, I am establishing a relationship with them that, that can then stand the test of future challenges, then it's worth it. You know, you see the fruit start to be born. And there's a person on the internet, I think her name is Tasoa Seed. I can't remember her first name, but that's her account. She's great. And she has a wide range of kids' ages like I do. And she calls it straddle parenting.
Oh, yeah.
Where you're straddling, like,
heard that.
Teenagers, toddlers, babies, everything in between. And it stretches you so thin, but it also gives you perspective, because while this 4-year-old is testing your patience like crazy, you're seeing the 17-year-old that tested your patience like crazy just do awesome, cool 17-year-old things. And it's so encouraging at the same time. So that's who I want to be with this book, is the person encouraging you and cheering you on to keep going, but giving you practical and very biblical. It's full of scripture, just like MS for Mama was. Podcast. Like I said, this is one of my favorite things. You might be able to tell. I like talking to people. But I can't, you know, I do in real life all the time talk to people, but you can't reach tens of thousands of people from your home unless you're doing it with technology. And that's the good aspect of technology. Yeah. So you're going to find, if you follow me on Instagram, I only have 2,200 characters or a reel or whatever, you know, to convey information. Yeah. Podcasts are more long form. They're not long. They're about 30 minutes long, but I'm able to flesh out these topics that get introduced to me every Wednesday on this Q&A that I do on social media called What Do You Want to Know Wednesday? And it's just like this really cool way to keep my finger on the pulse of mom culture and to say, what do people want to know? Just like you were doing with these questions that we talked about today. People send you these questions and you start to see themes emerge. And both of my books were written from those themes. It was like, this is what people need to know. These are the questions that they have. This is the struggle that all these moms are sharing. So the podcast gets to go more in detail and just breaks it down. Like, I have a toddler podcast. I have the one about generational parenting with my mom and the legacy that she's left me that I'm then making an effort to leave my children. I have a teens podcast where both of my teens are on there. So it's a lot of parenting stuff, but it's a lot of cultural stuff. I just love it. I think people enjoy it because it feels like just sitting down with a friend and having a good, deep conversation.
Yeah. And it's, for me, though, that kind of content, it's easy to consume while I'm doing things that I have to get done.
Yep.
So I don't have to miss a podcast, whereas like Instagram, I can't keep up at all with Instagram. And so that's why I enjoy podcasting so much. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Abby. And we will leave down in the show notes in the description box, depending on if you're watching this on YouTube or listening over on wherever, Spotify, Apple, links to the ebooks you've talked about, the podcast, and the book or the books. So thanks again so much for joining us.
Yeah, it was an absolute blast. Thanks for having me, Lisa.
All right. Well, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Simple Farmhouse Life podcast. Again, definitely go check out Abby's book. I could not recommend it more. She actually read her own audiobook version. I love audiobooks because that's the way that I can get information quickly and while I'm doing other things. So she, I think she had to sort of not fight with the publisher, but really push for her reading her own audiobook, and it's just really nice to hear her read her own book, and I've loved consuming it that way. I actually own the audiobook version and the physical book, but highly recommended the audio because, you know, as a busy mom, that's how you're gonna get it done, right? All right, well, as always, thank you so much for listening, and I will see you in the next episode.